Here's why you need to attend the Recruitment Coach Live Summit in London this September. Reason number one is networking. The opportunity to connect in person with like-minded recruitment business owners and share strategies and best practices. Of course, you can do that via Zoom or Teams, but the connection is deeper when you do it in real life. Wouldn't you agree? One of our previous attendees, Darcy, said that she loved the speakers and the content, but the best part for her was in between the sessions, the informal conversations with other successful business owners that sparked incredible insights and those aha moments. The quality of people in the room will be incredible, including many of the people you've heard me interview on this podcast. There's going to be big billing recruiters as well as business owners with multi-million pound businesses. What they all have in common is that they prioritize their own development. And no matter how successful they already are, they want to keep learning and growing. What's even more special and remarkable about this group is that they're all willing to share their knowledge and they're so generous at helping each other improve. Early bird pricing is still available. Register now by visiting recruitmentcoach.com/summit. Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. This is your host, Mark Whitby. I'm excited to be joined today by Callum Collins. Callum has been in recruitment for close to 10 years, having joined the industry straight out of university. He joined G&E Partners as a graduate trainee, and within 6.5 years, he was the managing director and partner of a 30-employee executive search firm. G&E Partners are a boutique organization with a number of specialist practice areas, including pharmaceuticals and biotech, medical devices, logistics supply chain, commercial construction, civil engineering, and energy and renewables. Callum is also board director and shareholder of AGS Associates and Baybridge, which were both spin-offs of G&E Partners back in January of 2022. When Callum took over as managing director, in just 2.5 years, he was able to grow the company from 8 people generating about $1 million in revenue to 30 people as it is today, generating $6 million. Callum, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me, Mark. I'm excited. It's good to be here. Thank you.
Brilliant. So I know we connected and corresponded on LinkedIn, but how did you originally come across me?
I've been listening to the podcast for quite some time, and actually a few people in my office said they had been listening to it, and I caught attention for it from there and listened to a few of the initial episodes, and just really insightful. And it's exactly what everybody goes through, the same thing. Sometimes you can be in recruitment and feel like it's only you going through it, but it's great to hear that other people are having the same struggles, and it's good to hear what some of the people's remedies are for the struggles that we're going through as well, and trying to implement them into what I'm doing or what the team are doing on a day-to-day basis. So I just found it really insightful, and actually got a few of the other members of my team to listen to it as well, and they found it really helpful.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm so happy to hear that. Thank you. So look, can you maybe tell your story? Let's start with, I'm going to call this chapter one, summarize your journey from grad to managing director. So like the first sort of six and a half years, because that's a very rapid progression. Yeah. Can you talk me through your initial early days in recruiting and how that evolved?
Absolutely. So yeah, similar to, I guess a lot of people, when you leave university, finished up my degree and still had no idea what I wanted to go into, to be honest, and kind of always been entrepreneurial, always been that salesman mindset really throughout my whole life, and really sort of pushed myself towards looking up sales roles and as well as recruitment positions, and came straight out of university, interviewed for a number of both of them sales and recruitment type opportunities, and really felt that recruitment was a better fit for me, just due to I'm quite a people person. I love being around people, and interviewed for a number of companies, and G&E Partners, Richard Goodall and Terry Ellis, who have basically been my mentors ever since. And they gave me the opportunity to come in as a trainee graduate and to start a brand new market, logistics and supply chain. And it was somewhere where I had no idea really what logistics and supply chain was, but I did a lot of research into it. Obviously, anyone knows that when you're in the recruitment game that you need to be an expert in the field that you're working in to be successful. And so I kind of doubled down in my knowledge of learning about the market in my own time, and quite quickly found my feet. And I'd probably say it's fair to say in my first full year in recruitment, I was probably an average to good recruiter. It was only really in my second year where I found my feet, and really the whole game changed for me, because I started to get some repeat clients, some good, some of the top players in the logistics world, the household names, DHLs, Agilities of the world, which were, came accounts to me, which was brilliant. And then started to build out a team, hired a couple of great people that came in and joined the team and really added very quickly and found their feet very quickly, probably quicker than what I did initially. And then, yeah, it gave me the opportunity where I became the top performer, the top contributor in a small business, but by all means, but quickly overtook people that had been in the business for 4 or 5 years. And at this point, I'd only been in the business for probably 2 years and was quickly outbilling those guys, even with them having the more experience and a quicker and a larger, I guess, client portfolio. And then become managing people in other teams and other sectors. So, and then I become a divisional manager where I was managing two different sectors. So I was managing life sciences as well as managing logistics. But I was only focused on obviously billing within my network in logistics. And then just before COVID really hit in 2019, there was a shift within the business where one of the key leaders at that point spun off to start a new organization, and it left the managing director position open. And I remember really going to Richard Goodall, who's a CEO at that point, and went up to him and said, listen, I think I'm ready. I think I'm ready to take the leap. And he believed in me, and that's probably the best way to put it, and gave me the opportunity. And then the rest has been history from there, and we can go on to talk about more of the decisions that were made once I become managing director. But that was really it. It was really focusing on my own billings, growing out my team, getting my guys to be as good, if not better, performers than me. That's obviously the name of the game when you're a manager. And then it comes to a point of being ready and being given the opportunity and grabbing it with both hands.
Amazing. I love that. So there's a lot to unpack there. So first of all, you mentioned the first to the second year. First year, you were sort of average to good.
Yeah.
And I can totally relate to that. It actually took me, I'd say 3 years before I actually knew what I was doing even. And, and even then, like looking back, I still knew nothing really in the grand scheme of things. But I'd say my apprenticeship, so to speak, to go from, you know, just kind of hitting my target and kind of no more to being a top producer was really a 3 year journey.
Yeah.
What was the key difference between year one and year two where things really started to click for you?
I think it was just understanding the process. I mean, when you come into recruitment with no prior experience to it, sometimes I feel like I always say to people in my team that a mistake's not a bad thing as long as you learn from it. And I think in my first full year, I was making number of mistakes, but I was always learning from them. So every time, every new process I got my hands on, I was getting better and better and better. And to the point where I would was successful in placing a couple of big level executives with one of the leading firms in the logistics space. And they just kept giving me more and more opportunities because I was doing a good job for them. And then that account really grew quite quickly. And before I knew it, I was almost didn't have enough time to fill all the vacancies they were providing me, which obviously is fantastic. And that's really where I was able to hire a team around a couple of accounts. And we got a good run of growth there from a couple of those businesses. So yeah, it was just trusting the process, I feel like, was probably my biggest route to success there.
Okay, great. So good takeaways there. So one, trusting the process. Two is learning from mistakes and not being afraid to make those mistakes. You mentioned also that you really threw yourself into like trying to learn everything you could about the industry that you were serving. And even in your own time, you were wanting to become a real expert, subject matter expert in that space. And finally, and importantly, you were able to win some good accounts, and one in particular that became a really big repeat account for you, which makes all the difference. If you can, you know, break into those kind of pillar accounts that are going to support you as you, you know, you build out your business, then that makes all the difference. So I think for listeners, you know, the takeaway here, if you're early on in your recruiting career, because a lot of people drop out in their first year and they don't make it past that. And obviously the first year of anything is going to be the hardest, right?
Yeah.
And the more you, if you go into that, into recruitment with the mindset that you know, this is not easy. This is going to be tough. There's going to be a learning curve. There's going to be a lot of rejection, disappointment, setbacks. And, you know, but if you know that going in and you know that
things do get easier over time. You build your network, you build your client base, you build your market knowledge. Things, it never gets easy, you know, so realistically, but it gets easier that hopefully that, you know, because it's just such a shame if people drop out when they could have been so close, like maybe the next call or the next month could have been their breakthrough if they'd had that tenacity and resilience to really stick with it.
I think that's something that you may agree or disagree. I think it's probably a controversial point as such, that I think people are either born with that tenacity. It's really hard for somebody to build and create a tenacity. I feel like a lot of recruiters that come into this industry is, and like you say, it's such a shame that so many people do drop out after the 6 to 8 month mark is probably that sort of time frame. But if you just stuck in there a little bit longer, you may get that break, and then you start to realize what this is, the process is all about. But I do believe myself that people either have that tenacity to be successful in recruitment, and I think it's quite hard to learn that tenacity. I think it does kind of come quite naturally to a lot of people that I've seen that have been successful in the space anyway. I'm not saying it's impossible, but I do think that that tenacity needs to be within you when you come into this industry.
It's interesting. I might frame it a little differently, Callum. I might say that it definitely has to come from within that individual. Mm-hmm. It's not something that a manager or business owner can give to somebody, right? Yeah. It has to, like, external motivating factors only take you so far, really.
Absolutely.
People's success is down to them, and they have to have that drive internally. But having said that, I do think it's something that, I don't think it's something you're born with, like, innately from birth. I do think obviously your experiences growing up and everything shapes who you are, but I do think that you can develop and enhance, you know, your own levels of desire, motivation, resilience. There's definitely things you can do to build on that, but it has to be self-directed. It's not something anybody can do for you.
Absolutely. I agree with that.
Yeah. Okay. So then you got an opportunity to hire your first couple of people, and then you did well with that. So then you started managing two divisions. Talk me through those early experiences as a manager, going from a biller to a billing manager, because that transition is tough, because now you've got to maintain your own billings and be a role model, right? Yeah. And be someone that others are emulating, which is pressure, right? Because you have to stay at the towards the top of the leaderboard. But at the same time, you now have a whole bunch of time which is absorbed in, you know, mentoring and onboarding people and coaching and nurturing them so that they get up to speed. How did you successfully make that transition?
And I think that comes back to what we spoke about before, Mark. I think I was quite lucky in a situation where I'd grown these accounts very well, and it made it an easy transition to bring people in to work straight on live accounts and live roles. Because sometimes the transition can be you bring people in and they haven't got enough on their desk to keep them busy and to keep them riding fees pretty quickly. And with me, because I had the accounts that I had, I was quite fortunate to be able to offload those accounts almost to the guys that were coming in, and I would go out and find new accounts. And that was kind of how I structured it. So to get them to find their feet, I would get them focusing on the live accounts, and I was focusing on more of the BD and going to find another big account that we could continue to do that same model of growth. So in all transparency, I found that transition easier than some, purely because I had that backup and foundation behind me. But I think, as you mentioned, and you're right there, and it's a really hard transition because it's time organization as well, which is tough because you go so used to just worrying all about yourself. And it's then making sure that you're doing the necessary training, the necessary support, and fitting that into your day, as well as you rightly say, continuing to keep your clients happy and writing the fees so you can stay at the leaderboard yourself. So, but I was very fortunate as well that we brought in people that were fantastic. The people we brought in are still with us to this day, and have been very, very successful with us. And actually, one of my first hire I ever made has been the top biller for our business for the last 2 years running. So he's done a fantastic job. And again, like I said, that's really where the transition for me happened. And then learning about another market, which I'll come on to in a moment, that more so happened just after I become managing director. But I was helping manage a different team within that period of time. time. And that was difficult because managing people in a market where I'm not as specialized as what I knew within logistics was tough, but it was still the same processes of recruitment. And again, managing people through that and understanding how to get from A to Z. So it was a tough time, but I love it. I love managing people and I love seeing people be successful. So it's a part of the job that I love.
I can tell you work the US market because you said Z instead of Z.
There you go.
It's rubbing off. Listen, so that makes total sense. So you were able to make that transition because you had plenty of business that people could come in straight away and they had roles to fill.
Yeah.
Is that the business model? Is it a kind of 180, you know, where people either focus on candidates or business development? Or what's the actual structure within G&E?
Yeah, so they come in as 360 consultants, but there's normally a period of the first 3 months when they're still trying to learn the job is that we're giving them roles to work on straight away so they can understand the process. Right. So it's more first 3 months, it's more candidate focused while they're still trying to get their heads around what recruitment actually is. As I'm sure you know, Mark, it's not a straightforward process and it does take some time getting to understand it and also to get them some success. I mean, it's harder to go from straight in cold desk trying to find clients, find candidates to then get on the board, and we want them to see some success early on so they can start reaping rewards of what this job can actually pay financially, because we all know that executive search, one of the upsides of it, if you get this job right, it can be very financially rewarding, and we want them to get a taste of that as soon as we can. So we think that the best way for them to do that in the short term is to maybe focus on candidate side on live roles that we've got great relationships with and have farmed them over a number of years. And then once they've started to understand that, we start almost drip feeding them into more business development, start going to find your own clients and then building it from there. So that's typically how we structure it.
All right. I love that. I think it's so smart to do it that way. And so any listeners who are running a business or managing a team of 360 consultants, This is a great way of getting people up to speed quickly and cash flow positive quickly, so they are already contributing and paying for themselves. And as you say, getting a taste of success, so that is like a virtuous cycle of motivation, right? If they make some quick placements and then they get a real sense of satisfaction and it boosts their confidence, which then becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Whereas when I first started, and I hope there's no companies out there who are still doing it this way, but it was very much, here's a desk, here's a phone, like zero recruiting experience, go and get clients. And then like, we'll teach you the next bit after that. And then, it's a lot to learn and if you don't hit target in 3 months, then you're pretty much toast. So it's rough, but
I agree. Yeah.
What you mentioned that the people that you brought in were fantastic and that makes all the difference. Again, 100%. Like, it's so much easier to manage people who are, who are excellent and who are fantastic, who are self-motivated, smart, ambitious, want to work hard, already have those internal attributes we talked about, like the tenacity, resilience, drive and so on. I understand, is your model still hiring grads and training them?
Yes, that is the model, yeah.
Okay, so this is the million-dollar question, Callum. How do you identify with someone who has zero experience, how do you identify the ones that are most likely to actually be good at this and be successful?
That's a great question, Mark. And I think that's the golden answer is that we're always looking for is when you're bringing in with people with no experience, you can't really relay to how good they're going to be. Now, obviously, our interview process is quite thorough in terms of what we wanted to see from them and get them to do presentations and to see how their communication skills would be if they were presenting to a client. So you can start to get little insights there, but it's nothing to do with the actual job. We're really hiring a personality and a culture fit to our business. And the culture fit to our business is that we're all nice, humble people that want to be successful. That is really what we are and what we're looking to hire. And people that want to be better than myself, that want to be bigger and better than me. And if we can bring people in that have that mindset and the I guess the hunger to be successful, then that's really all we can ask for. And we can teach them how to be recruiters. I mean, we have multiple people in this business that can support them and aid them and train them into to be where they need to be to achieve everything they tell me throughout the interview process. And it really just does come down to if we look at them and really genuinely believe that what they're saying is the reality, because everybody can talk a great game, as I'm sure you can appreciate. They can say mm-hmm. you want to achieve X, Y, Z, but it's how feasible do we believe that is from the character that you portray when speaking with us? And that's really how what it boils down to. And given sometimes it comes down to giving these guys a chance at trying to be successful in an industry that is that I've fallen in love with over the years, obviously, hence why I'm so passionate about it as I am today. And I think everybody has the opportunity in recruitment to be successful.
So you made a good point there, which is people at interview are going to come across well. It's a bit like a first date, you know. Yeah. People are, you know, putting their best self forward. So how do you really put people through their paces and try and get underneath a little bit to see what their character and their values really is and their mindset and whether they have what it takes to, you know, you mentioned something I liked, which was you want people who are nice and yeah. humble, but also who really have that hunger to be successful. Mm-hmm. And so how do you evaluate that?
I mean, yeah, listen, there's a number of ways that we do that. I think when we speak to people, it's you mentioned it before, Mark, is really also letting them know how tough this job is, because resilience and tenacity, as we touched upon before, is the number one characteristic that I want to see in somebody to come and join this organization. And it's really sort of relaying to them how tough the job is in the first 6 months and almost kind of gauging their reaction to that. You could almost say to a point of trying to give them all the bad sides of the role and of the industry and seeing their initial reaction to that is one. I mean, a second one is, as I said before, we always ask anybody to come and join the business to do a presentation on what the market is, what they know about executive search, what do they know about, we might give them a particular market to focus on, whether it be medical devices, and get them to come in and present on that. Because what that shows us is what their research skills are like in terms of going in, digging into the market, in terms of the level of intricacies they go into within their presentation. But the biggest thing for me is how they deliver that. If they come in and deliver that in a really positive, upbeat manner, and I can almost imagine them pitching that to a client, that's a huge thing. And that's a huge buy-in sign that, again, you can't gauge it on their experiences, but you can gauge it on how they come across in an interview and in a presentation format. So they're some of the key things that we do to really try and dig into that. But like I said, throughout the process, we're always asking them to do different feedbacks on us in terms of what things they may have liked or maybe things that they haven't liked throughout the interview process. And also we do a psychometric testing as well, which comes back in terms of what type of individuals are they, in terms of are they more analytical thinking, are they more of a an aggressive type when it comes to obviously cold calling personality. And that's typically what that shows us. So we can kind of build a profile of the people that are coming in to interview us, and then we can gauge that against profiles that have come in and been successful previously, and then we can start to understand if we think somebody's probably going to be a good fit. But we've been using that for quite some time, and it's an instrument that, again, like I said, gives us a really good insight into like I said, their backgrounds and realistically, how are they going to fit? Because we obviously, everybody in the business has been psychometric tested, even myself, and you can kind of mm-hmm. get a good read of the who has been successful within each. And obviously, you get a blend. There's nothing that doesn't mean a one size fits all. You get some analytical individuals that will come in and be great in terms of building relationships and understanding what niche markets to maybe focus on, and they get great results in that sense. And you'll get people, as I mentioned before, that are maybe slightly more cutthroat and direct with their communication, and them guys are typically great at business development, hunting down new clients, cold and really enjoy cold calling. So there's multiple ways to be successful within recruitment, and but it's just always good for us to understand who's coming in and what type of backgrounds they have, so it matches up and pairs well with the teams that we were to put them in.
So interesting. So you have multiple layers of assessment. You have you're trying to put people off the rolls, giving them the real picture, all warts and all. Number two, you are asking them to prepare and deliver a presentation. Number three, you've got psychometric testing. Is there anything else that is like important in you deciding whether someone is yay or nay?
I would say they're the main ones, to be honest. And it really does come down, it's hard to explain in terms of gut feeling when you assess all of what you just mentioned. And then they're sitting there across the desk from you and just getting a gut feeling of if you think that this person is going to really be add value. Because I'm not just looking to bring in people that are going to be consultants in the business. I mean, that's what they're going to come in as initially. But I want them to come and try and take my job. That's the plan. And if they can do that with the model that obviously we spoke about previously, then they have a great opportunity to be successful.
Do you know, I'm so glad that you mentioned that, because this is a huge opportunity stroke mistake that I see with business owners. When they're hiring people, they're not necessarily thinking about the future succession planning and being able to scale, and hiring people with leadership qualities and that drive and ambition who want to progress. And you know, there's no way that you can scale a business unless you are promoting people regularly. Absolutely. Based on merit, obviously. So it's interesting that something that you're actually paying attention to.
I think it's pivotal to growth. I mean, to grow a business, you need people with leadership skills to come through, because to have any business that's going to grow, you need managers to be developing through from consultants and then them growing teams. And then that's how you're going to spin it out and have quicker level of growth as well. So that's pivotal in my opinion.
Okay. No, I could talk about this topic for forever. It's a recurring topic in our Apex program, which is for owners who want to scale their business, to 8 figures and beyond. And my colleague Leanne actually has presented a whole session on this. Leanne's background was RecToRec. So she had her own RecToRec business and it was focused on the grad market. So a lot of the people she was placing were grads, or is there maybe their second job, but their first recruitment job. Yeah. And she's placed 700 recruiters in her career. So she's done a whole session for our clients on how to, you know, identify people who on paper, like she was really good at seeing someone's resume and being able to think this person there was clues she was looking for to think this is the person that, you know, could be really good at recruiting. Yeah. And a lot of the people who she ultimately placed who've gone on to be successful and are now managers, directors, and business owners themselves, they had never considered recruiting actually before she approached them. So she actually pitched the idea to them from like completely cold and turned a lot of people onto recruiting. So, it's an interesting topic with a lot of dimensions, but
absolutely.
Moving on then to look at, you then had this opportunity arose, I guess, six and a half years into your career where there was an opening because the managing director spun off to another company. What gave you the confidence to put your hand up and say, I want that?
I don't really know at the time, thinking back, Mark. I think it just I've always been an individual that I'm confident, and I always the mentality if I don't believe in myself, who's going to believe in me? And it was an opportunity that I just felt that with the management skill and exposure that I'd had so far, it had gone pretty well at that point. And the business was still a small team at that moment in time, and I just felt that where the business was at and where I was at in terms of my development, I knew enough about the company. I knew enough about recruitment, and I looked back at my experiences as a manager and it had gone pretty well. So I just thought at that point that, take the plunge, put your hand up and go for it. And listen, if it doesn't come around this time, then I'm sure there'll be another time. And like I said before, I mean, remember sitting down with Richard Goodall and Terry Ellis. By the way, I mean, Richard Goodall will be a great person for you to speak with, Mark. I mean, he has been fantastic for me as a mentor, but also in terms of he runs an around 10 to 12 recruitment companies across his groups, and is a great guy. But yeah, he sat down.
Awesome.
And I
know Richard. I know of Richard, but I don't know him personally. So thanks for the referral.
No problem. And he gave me the opportunity, and he said, listen, what you've done so far in terms of the management, as I was reassuring myself, he said, has been fantastic. And I think you can do this. And and the rest was history.
I really admire that, Callum. It's so different to me because I'm turning 50 next month.
Yeah.
And I'm only now scaling my business. And I was definitely not a natural manager. I'm the sort of person that's very self-sufficient.
Yeah.
I enjoy my own company. I like being responsible for myself. Mm-hmm. And I think it's only been through maturity over time that I've kind of grown into. It's a bit like, you know, becoming a parent. I now have teenagers, and I, you know, at the beginning when I was having, you know, my first child, I couldn't imagine being being a parent to teenagers, but you kind of grow into it. And I think that's what I've done is over time I've grown into, you know, being a leader. But it sounds like from early on you just knew that's what you wanted to do.
And I think it comes down to, I mean, even it maybe not a direct correlation of it, but even throughout my childhood, and I'm a big sporty guy myself, and in every sport I've played, I've always been a captain and led teams, and so it was kind of a natural progression, I think, to me when it came into my career to head down that same path. And I like being leading from the front, leading by example, and that's why I was quite keen to put my hand up, and thankfully I was given the opportunity.
That's amazing. You know, I think recruiters need to hear this because they may not realize that those opportunities are available, and you just need to grasp them, because the reality is, and not all business owners are good at communicating what the opportunity for progression is. And we teach our clients that you should have a very clear career path for people, so they see the opportunity, they understand what are the levels and what's the criteria for promotion, what do I need to do in terms of billings, and what other, you know, things do I need to demonstrate in order to be eligible to be promoted, and for them to really see that laid out, because otherwise people don't know necessarily even that is a possibility.
Absolutely.
Whereas the reality is business owners want to grow, they want to scale. But unless you spell it out to people, they're not necessarily going to do what you did and put their hand up and say, look, I want, what's the next level and how do I get there?
Yeah. So, and I'm not sure if you've seen on our website exactly that, Mark. On our website, we have a career pathway where it shows you how to go from graduate consultant to managing director and partner. That pathway is so clear for exactly the reason you mentioned. I mean, if that doesn't motivate people and understanding what you have to do to get to the next step, and within each of those different sections and those job titles of the promotions, there's a checklist of what you have to achieve before you can have your review and say, listen, I've done all of this, I'm ready to move to the next stage. And it's just black and white for everybody. And it's just how bad and how quickly do you want to achieve that now? It's back over to them to then perform to that level to achieve all of the above.
Amazing. Just one more question on this idea of hiring grads who are hungry and want to progress.
Yeah.
And then I want to ask about let's call it chapter two, being the managing director and then growing it quite significantly. And then where things go from here, we'll call it chapter three. So there's this conversation in our industry about, you know, young people coming into the business, and they're like, I'm Gen X. Sorry, yeah. I'm a Gen X. And, you know, a lot of owners and directors my age tell me, oh, you know, younger people, they don't want to work hard. You know, they're not motivated by the same things we are. I don't know how to manage these, you know, these folks. And I think that's unfair, because I can see some fantastic young people coming into our industry. But what's your take on this question, and how do you think, you know, the industry has evolved in order to get the best out of people? How do leaders need to be approaching this?
Yeah, I think it's unfair, as you mentioned, to tarnish everybody with the same brush. I mean, there are some fantastic young, inspirational, almost even at a young age, individuals that are coming through that have that clear desire of where they want to go. And I think it kind of leads back onto what we were mentioning before, Mark, and saying about what the leaders have to do to get the best out of them. I think it's complete transparency of where they can go, how they can achieve it, and really having it in black and white in front of them to say, if that's really what you want, there's your pathway to go and achieve it, and giving them all the necessary support and tools to be able to go and do that. So my honest and maybe short answer to that is just complete transparency of where they want to go, and trying to do anything you can to set them a clear pathway to achieve whatever that goal may be. Because not everybody wants to be a business owner, not everybody wants to do that, and that's absolutely fine. We have people within this business that don't necessarily want to be a business owner, but are quite happy to be a top performer running and managing teams within this business, and that's fantastic. Not everybody has to go and be a business leader, but we can set up a pathway to them to get to that point, and everybody will have a slightly different end goal, and it's making sure we can be tailored to making sure everybody can achieve what they want to achieve, and setting out a really clear path for them.
Is there anything else, Callum, apart from transparency that you guys are consciously doing in order to really create employee engagement and retention that taps into, as you said, people are motivated by different things. So how do you tap into that and make sure everyone's engaged, even if they're different personalities with different goals?
I mean, incentives is a huge one. I mean, we run a number of incentives across the business, and those incentives are things everybody would like to be a part of. We've done skiing incentives where we would go skiing for 5 days, all expenses paid for, the trip over, all the ski hire, the ski lifts, and everybody gets involved with that. We've done trips to we did a trip to LA for 5 days. We've got a trip starting 2 weeks time to Las Vegas for 5 days, and we put these incentives in place because you have to remember these guys are graduates coming straight in, and haven't been coming out of university, for some of them for two years, and everyone knows what it's like at university, that money can be tight, and having the opportunity to fly over to Vegas, to fly over to LA, to go skiing on an amazing ski and in a chalet. These guys typically don't have the access to do that. But the reason why we do that is to, obviously it's incentives that they have to hit with revenue numbers, but it's to give them the exposure to understand what they could do and what they can achieve, and they could do all these trips out of their own pocket if they continue to keep doing the right things. And it's more just opening their eyes up to what's actually achievable from a financial perspective if you are successful within the executive search space. So incentives, transparency, and I guess some more in-house incentives that we run as a benefit to employees. That again, we're big on trying to get people onto the property ladder. So we have partnered with a brokering firm that help people get onto the property ladder, and we pay for all of our consultants' broker fees. We pay for them from the business because we want to encourage them to the money that is made from executive search to get on the property ladder as an investment, and we offer that to all employees as well. So just little things, I guess, Mark. Well,
that's cool. I've not come across that before. That's quite original. I like it. Okay, well, let's talk then about the next phase, you took over the business. There was eight of you, and it was doing around $1 million, 80,000 some US dollars per month.
Yeah.
How did you take it from there to getting to the point now? I think you told me it's 770,000 a month or something?
Yeah, so just a slight correction on that. So from when I took over in, I think it was around 2019 or 2019 July, I took over as managing director, and then needed to make some changes, I think was the first thing I wanted to do. I really wanted to open up our horizon of more markets to venture into. We had the core markets of commercial construction, logistics and civil engineering, but that was the, they were our main real focus areas. But I felt that there was a lot more that we could be tapping into, and that was one of the first things I wanted to do. I wanted to really open up our horizons when it came to markets that we could offer to clients, and did a lot of research into that, in a lot of late nights and weekends spending in doing research into some of the market leaders. What were they doing? What areas were they? What job roles were they focusing on? And from there, really pushed out to medical devices, energy renewables, and the big one, which obviously I took over in July 2019, and COVID hit in March of 2020. And you could call it fortunate, Mark. You could call it a stroke of genius. Depends how you wanna put it. But I would say more fortunate, to be honest with you, because no one really knew what was going to happen with COVID. But we decided to start our pharmaceutical biotech market in the November, so 4 months after I took over as managing director. We were starting to find our feet. We're starting to have some initial interaction with some clients within that space, and then a lot of companies struggled with COVID. I mean, a lot of recruitment companies, and I understand how, but for us, it was honestly a game changer for where we went from there, because the biggest hurdle that we were, I'm sure a lot of executive search firms come across, is relocation. It's one of the obstacles, right? You can have a perfect candidate, but they're based in San Francisco. This needs to be based in New York, and unfortunately, they can't move. Now, when COVID came and the remote working situation became acceptable for every business, one of the big obstacles that we had was then taken away, and so we found our feet very quickly and had a flurry of big level executive placements with some reputable firms, as well as a smaller biotech, startup biotechs, and that really was a game changer, I would say, for us in terms of our growth, because we got very close with some big accounts in the pharmaceutical industry very quickly. We met a couple of them down at Heathrow Airport when they were passing through, just start sort of at the end of the first bout of COVID, and that just further grew our level of relationship we had with them. And they were going through expansion after COVID. They had obviously kept the purse strings quite tight during that period. And when the COVID was starting to wear off, that initial one anyway, they were looking to hire quite aggressively. And that fed perfectly into us and our growth. And as the model I mentioned with you earlier, at this point, we had four strong pharmaceutical accounts that were looking to hire quite aggressively in terms of executive level placements. So I was able to hire people in to work on those, whilst myself and a couple of others, the more experienced guys, went out and tried to find new business. And that was a pivotal point, really, in that growth, because that allowed us to, obviously, the cash generation and revenue generation from those them accounts was allowed me to also hire and grow out other sectors, as the medical device team, the energy renewable team, etc. So the life science, that period of 6 to 9 months from March of 2020 to January of 21, that was a huge opportunity for us, and a huge surge of revenue that we was then able to spend to grow other teams, which then obviously naturally had a positive effect as well.
Fantastic. This is really interesting, Cal. It sounds like a lot of the growth of the business is based on your success at winning accounts.
Yeah.
And which makes total sense, right? If you want to grow, you need to create more demand than you can fulfill. And then that gives you the Absolutely. Cash and the confidence to expand the team.
Yeah.
So could we just segue a little bit? I want to talk about the scaling process, and also the way that you spin off other businesses is really interesting. But why do you think, as you personally have been, and as a business, you've been so successful at going into markets and then winning, you know, those big accounts?
I think it's the way that we work. We're very different. The way that we operate with a number of these clients, especially in the pharmaceutical industry, as I mentioned before. I mean, in that market, we tend to feel that the rates that people are also charging, the way that they structure their fees, the way they go into market and find candidates are very different. We operate from a talent management perspective. Now, talent management perspective essentially means that rather than just speaking to clients, getting a vacancy or a need, and then going to find candidates that relate relate to that. We speak to candidates. We want to be working with the top 1% of candidates in the space. So I'll approach a candidate on LinkedIn that I believe is in the top 1% of whichever function or area they may be within, and just have a networking conversation, understand where they are, talk about a bit about their career, and also what the end game is. As similar to when people come and join our business, and I want to know what their end game is. The same when I speak to candidates in the market, that what's the end game for you? Where do you want to go from here? You're currently a VP or SVP. What C-suite function do you want to go down in the long run? And what have you got to learn from either the role you're in now or your next opportunity in terms of learning, growth, stretch, and challenge, really, to get to that point? And sometimes they say, listen, in this role where I am right now, this is probably as far as I can go, but I love the company. I've been here for 15 years and I've had a great trajectory here. However, if I want to get to CEO, for example, I'm going to need to learn X, Y, Z before I can get there. And I'm not going to learn that here. So I'm happy where I am. But when you get this perfect opportunity, then please reach out to me. And we continue to keep touching base with those guys. And it's not necessarily a quick win. Sometimes it can be 2 or 3 years later from when I first spoke to a candidate that then that perfect opportunity comes up. I tap back in and straight away the candidate buy-in that I'm receiving from that is first class, because they think he remembers everything from 3 years ago and straight away understood this is a perfect fit for me. Everything that we spoke about, this is exactly what I need to get to where I want to be potentially even after this role. So we're always looking almost two roles ahead from where they are right now. And that means when we go into the market with these candidates, we've got not only first in class, but we've also got candidates that are motivated, ready to move, and are a glove fit for those organizations. So it allows us to have not only a warm open door feel, but an opportunity where somebody can add genuine value to them from the get-go.
Okay, awesome. So I'm really glad you explained that. And this highlights one of the advantages of a 360 model. On previous podcasts, I've had guests talking about the disadvantages and why they've restructured. They've gone to like 180 or 120.
Yeah, I was watching
it's interesting. Like, there's not one right way of doing
this,
right?
But there's not.
The advantage of 360 is you have someone who is building those candidate relationships,
yeah,
and they can develop into client relationships, but also they know the client base and they can make those kind of connections. And of course you could do that as a team, but I think it's easier if you're the one building those relationships and making the introductions to clients as well.
Absolutely.
So first of all, you're nurturing relationships with the top talent in your niche, which may not lead immediately to a placement, but are still valuable connections.
Absolutely.
And
by doing that as well, Mark, sorry to jump in there, by doing that as well, that's also, these guys we're obviously speaking with top level executives and they are hiring managers in their own right. Also by building that relationship and constant touch and base with these guys, just initially as candidates, you'd be surprised how many times then all of a sudden they turn into a client when they say, actually, Cam, until the opportunity comes up, I'm trying to look for this in my team. And all of a sudden, that candidate that wasn't a client and BD focused, all of a sudden does become exactly that. And it's all about turning candidates into clients as well, which this model does more often than not.
Right. Let's just double click on that. Because, by the way, this is super old school. And if you listeners go to my website, by the way, Calum, I've got a brand new website. I'd love you to check it out and give me your feedback. So if you go to recruitmentcoach.com and then look for resources, there's an ebook and it's old. Like I've had this ebook for maybe, I don't know, I'm going to say 8 or 9 years. It's called 7 Ways to Get New Clients Fast.
Yep.
But the number one of those 7 is, the best way to get clients is through recruiting and turning candidates into clients because it's so much of an easier conversation.
Absolutely.
People are more responsive. You know, they're naturally curious to learn about, well, what kinds of opportunities could you present to me?
Yep.
And so it's so much easier to spark conversations with someone when you approach them about their own career development rather than pitching them your service.
Absolutely.
But I'd be curious about how you do that. Like, do you broach that on the very first conversation, or do you leave it and wait for it to come up more more organically? What's your kind of
not on the first conversation. First conversation, I'm just really just trying to get to know these guys, and it's just having a conversation of, as I mentioned before, understanding where they are, learn a bit about their career. Just trying to actually know them as a person. What are they into? It's a very informal conversation about their journey and where they are, and sort of probing them a bit more about where they're looking to go, as I mentioned prior. But then, as I said, it's not just one conversation, then we'll speak to you in 2 years when the opportunity comes up. It's regular touching bases with these guys. And I'd say every 3-4 weeks we touch base. And again, it could be a 5-10 minute conversation. It doesn't need to be a 45 minute war and peace type conversation. It can be very short, just checking in, how are things? I'm just giving you an update, nothing quite yet. Or even if you think something's close to what they may be looking for, you could even say, listen, I've got this opportunity, XYZ. I don't think it's quite right for this reason from what you mentioned to me previously. What are your thoughts? And they may agree, saying it's not quite the right fit, and that's absolutely fine. But it keeps touching base and builds my credibility and our credibility of what we've got on our desk and what we're working on, and also constantly reassuring them that I understand it's not quite perfectly aligned to what they're looking for, to make them realize that I'm the guy for them to come to when they are ready to go, because I know exactly what they're looking for. And then that's really when it comes to maybe the second or third conversation. I'll be like, how's things where you are at the moment? Any developments within your organization? Anything moving forward? Any development there? And if so, is there anything potentially that you're looking for in your team? And if you are looking, then don't hesitate to let me know, and kind of just dropping it in there rather than being quite forthcoming with it. So that's typically how I would approach it, Mark.
So it's really interesting. How do you organize yourself to have those regular touch points and nurturing conversations with those top candidates?
Yeah. So for our CRM system that we use, we have a alert system that can, we can put a timer on it on a particular profile that will send us an alert via email to say, it's been 3 weeks since you last made contact with this person. Would you like to make contact? And if we say yes, then it puts it straight into our diary for us to make a call to them. So the alert system to having that on our system is fantastic. And it's been a great help for us. And I think that for us, that's probably been a bit of a game changer, I would say, being able to, because it's quite difficult, right? If you put it into the CRM system and you have to make sure it's been 3 weeks, 4 weeks, and managing that yourself. But having that, it just makes it easier for everybody. And like I said, you get the alert pop up on your laptop or your computer or whichever device you're using, and it just makes it a lot easier.
Totally. Makes sense. What CRM is it that you guys are using?
We're using the CRM system is Bullhorn.
Okay.
Do you know Bullhorn, Mark?
And yeah, of course. And is the timer thing native, or is that an extra tool that plugs into Bullhorn?
It's an extra addition. I mean, but previously we had it, and that wasn't an add-on, which was, it was useful. It kind of came through LinkedIn more so, it did with Bullhorn, and probably in the last 18 months or so, I'd say it's probably been now that it's connected with Bullhorn, and just made it a lot easier for us to chase things down, as I said. So it's been great.
What's the name of the tool that enables you to, that reminds you and prompts you to reconnect with people?
Yeah, so we have Source Whale. Is kind of that allows us to connect through Bullhorn and give us a nudge as and when we need it.
Got it. Yeah, I know Source Whale. A lot of our clients are using that.
It's brilliant.
So that's fantastic. In terms of just the logistics of this, is there a certain number of contacts that you want to be like in that target list of people that you're nurturing on a regular basis?
I wouldn't say there's a direct number. I mean, there's never enough, right? I mean, there's never enough top quality candidates that we can be connecting with and taking on our representation here at G&E Partners. So I wouldn't say there's a direct number. I mean, everybody will have KPI driven in terms of the numbers of people that we want people to be connecting with and touching base with, the same as with clients as well. But no, I wouldn't say there's one generic number, Mark, that I could pull out and give you now in terms of that we want to be speaking to. But you can probably imagine the more we can have in the hopper, the better.
100%. Look, there's so many directions we could go here. The KPIs is one, but I'm going to be strict with myself, and because I really want to hear about these spin-off companies and how you've created this opportunity within your firm for people to become business owners themselves. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, listen, the model that, again, Richard, Terry and I sat down and we wanted to give everybody the opportunity to have their own entity. And that's really, as you mentioned before, that's a huge incentive for anybody that comes into recruitment that is entrepreneurial sales mindset, that they could have their own organization and grow their own team. So that was the first thing. And we really wanted to grow the business to a point where the company was not only profitable enough, and as I mentioned before, we grew it from 8 people to 31, I think it actually was, at the end. And we went from 80,000 a month to 775,000 a month in the space of, I think it was around 18 months to 2 years. It was a huge level of growth, nearly 10x in our monthly revenues. And that really come from all of what I mentioned before. But then it was giving our top performers the opportunity. And we sat down with them, and similar to the career pathway thing you mentioned before, Mark, was saying, listen, is this what you want to do? Do you want to go off and have your own entity? And giving them a target to what they had to achieve within the teams that they were running. Now, the two managing directors of AGS and Baybridge were running large teams within that business of 30. So really set them a revenue target, a contribution target within their teams, and they both achieved them. And listen, Alex and Arthur, who are the MDs of those organizations, were fantastic, really knowledgeable guys in terms of the areas that they focused in. And again, it comes down to the tenacity and the hunger to want to be successful. And like I said, we set them up, had given them the opportunity to go, and they achieved the targets. And in January 22, Arthur set up AGS Associates, and Alex Ellis set up Baybridge Executive Search. And both of them have gone on to have really successful first years. Both businesses have grown significantly on headcount and also in revenue, which is brilliant. And again, I've had a good start to 2023 as well. So I've been really successful, and that's really the model that we want to continue to grow. And now G&E Partners, because both of them guys took a number of their teams, we're in a regrowth situation again, which is something that I enjoy doing. But as you can imagine, it's always tough to get through when you've got that small team to get back up past that 20 number, and that's really where we're at the moment. But it's been a good start to the year so far. But again, a lot of work still to do, Mark.
Wow, it's so interesting. I can see this being a real double-edged sword. On the one hand, you've solved the number, I don't know if it's number one, but a critical challenge that business owners face is when you've got really talented, ambitious, and successful people that you've developed, there's always that risk that they go off and set up on their own, right? Yep. And so you've almost accounted for that and said, well, look, let's actually help people to do that.
Yep.
And that way we're supporting them. They've got the best of both worlds. They are getting to run their own entity, but at the same time, we're partnering with them together. So we both benefit.
Yep.
And we're not losing, you know, like they're not setting up in competition to us, but we're actually working collaboratively. So absolutely, I see that being a huge benefit. On the flip side, you've just described a situation where someone leaves and they take, you know, their team with them, and then the G&E Partners has then contracted, and then you have to, yeah, like you work super hard to scale things back up again.
Yeah.
That sounds tough. How have you managed that side of the?
No, absolutely, it's tough. And like I said, obviously, with Arthur and Alex being so influential as they were to get to G&E Partners to the position that it was in, losing both of those guys, and rightly so, it's tough. But listen, it's one of the elements of the job that I love, and bringing in, again, youthful guys that are hungry and wanting to succeed, and really now hoping they're the next guys that can go in whenever we're ready to go. Maybe that'd be 2-3 years' time. I'm not sure on the timescales, but we'll know when it's right, but we're now pushing them. Now I think we were left with around 8 people when them guys left, and we're now up to 14. So we added 6 across last year, and we've got a couple lined up for July and a couple lined up for September. So I'm hoping by the end of the year we should be around the 18 19 number if everything goes well. And then we kick on and we grow from there. But even when you get to that number, it's about consolidating and making sure. Obviously, we haven't started up from the ground up like so many other startups have. So we've obviously had the foundation, my account, some of the other guys that have stayed here. I mentioned Ben Hoffman, who's been fantastic for us, and he's still on board, and again is looking to kick on, and his accounts are still within the business. So we're not starting from a standing start. We're almost jogging, but no, listen, there's still a long way to go, and but we've had a really good start to the year, so it's we're excited to see what comes now. We're already in Q2, which is crazy.
Absolutely. What, speaking of the market, how are you finding things? Because I it seems very it's a strange market, right? And it's sort of confusing. You're getting all kinds of mixed signals. You know, some sectors seem to be doing extremely well. Other sectors seem to be, you know, you've got headcount freezes and redundancies happening. What are you seeing in your core markets?
I think, listen, there's a lot of noise around, isn't there, about the markets and people struggling. And don't get me wrong, I understand that. But I think if you've got the core base of the clients and the accounts that we spoke about throughout this podcast, really, it's, I don't think the struggles of, for us so far anyway, haven't really impacted us. I think the market, all markets are different. I mean, there's talk about other markets maybe slightly taking a downturn, other markets starting to pick up. So I think it all kind of balances itself out. And it's one of the reasons why we do the markets that we do, because all of the markets that we mentioned before are relatively solid markets in terms of their movement. You don't get any big drop-offs like you would if in oil and gas, for example, when things can really peak and trough quite dramatically. All of these markets, infrastructure, for example, there's always, especially in the US, I mean, the US infrastructure is way behind where it should be, and there's always money being pumped into that. And no matter if there's a recession or COVID, there's still new tunnels and bridges and train lines that need to be built to improve the transportation over there. So all the markets that we're in anyway haven't really taken a big hit, and hopefully that continues, Mark. But yeah, I wouldn't say so far we've had any wobbles as such.
Got it. Well, that's good to hear. But do you know what? I suspect this is a case of you're creating your own reality, because I've spoken to people in some of those markets, like pharmaceutical, you know, biotech, that sort of thing, who in their world, they are seeing a downturn.
Yep.
So I do think to some extent, like, there's always opportunity in every market.
Absolutely.
And it's, so it depends, like, if you imagine you're sitting in your house, and on one side, this can easily happen in Scotland. I don't know about where you are, but their sun is shining if I look out that window. And if I look at a different window, I can see, you know, clouds, and it's rain starting, you know, the rain clouds are coming in. So depending on which part of the, you know, which part of your market you're looking at and what you're focused on, you may see a different reality. But
absolutely. And I think that's completely that. And again, I'm not by any means saying that there's not been troubles in other markets. I completely understand that there is, but it's like you say, you have to just try and identify the right opportunities and the right clients and the right accounts at the right time. And sometimes you can weather the storm with that. As like I said with you with COVID before, we landed on some great accounts which were really beneficial to us through that time. But I'm also aware that many recruitment companies didn't land on that, and maybe that was a tough time for them.
Callum, just before we go, could you speak briefly about, you mentioned that recruiting has given you an opportunity to, you know, become an investor, and the impact it's had on your life. Because I know that you're so passionate about this industry. Could you say a little on that?
Yeah, I mean, completely changed my life, really, from where I was coming out of university to where I am now. But not even just my life. I mean, had a huge impact on my family's life as well, and what I've been able to do for my family, but also what I've been able to do for me personally. I mean, I'm really keen on property. I've managed to build a property portfolio over the years through what this opportunity and what this business and this industry has given me. And I just think it's, if you're the right-minded person with the headspace to be successful, then the financial gains and that you can make within this industry are huge. And I mean, I'm super passionate about this industry. You probably gauge that from this conversation. But I just think if they're the right mentality individual, then there's no better place to grow something and grow it for yourself.
Fantastic. So Callum, like if there's anyone listening who likes the sound of what Callum has described, then feel free to reach out to him. It's Callum Collins on LinkedIn. What's the website address, Callum?
It's ge-partners.co.uk.
Great. Okay. Fantastic. This has been awesome. Really enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah. Look forward to speaking with you again soon.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Mark. Appreciate your time.
All right. I hope you enjoyed that episode. I know I certainly did. What a fantastic guest, Callum Collins. What were your takeaways from that conversation? I'll tell you my three golden nuggets. Number one is that business development is the driver of growth. Callum explained how the critical success factor behind their rapid growth was really based on opening accounts with repeat business potential, creating that demand, which then made it easy to scale the company because they had plenty of vacancies and roles to work on. So that was number one. Number two was he shared his most effective business development strategy was actually building relationships with candidates first and foremost, and nurturing those relationships and turning those candidates into clients. So that was super interesting how there's a real strategy and thought process behind that. That sounds super effective. And number three, in terms of scaling a business, is hiring people who are ambitious and have leadership qualities. Even if they're a graduate or a trainee, we're looking for people who have the right qualities, and then giving them, showing them the career path, showing them how they can get from trainee to managing director. And, you know, if you want to scale, you have to have the right people on board, and then you have to create those opportunities for them to progress. So super interesting. Hope you found that valuable. Please reach out to me. Let me know what were your key takeaways. Let me know via email, via LinkedIn. And if you want to support the podcast, the best way you can do that is to subscribe, follow us on Apple or wherever you're listening to podcasts, and please do leave us a review. That helps us to reach more people and lets us know that you're enjoying the content that we're putting out for you here. Make it a great day, and thanks for listening.